Back in 2004, Veronica Mars was a high school student working for her private eye father on the side. After three seasons on the air and a crowdfunded movie in 2014, Veronica is back.
Now an adult and still a detective, Veronica tackles a fresh mystery in a set of new episodes available on Hulu. She still works with her father, she's still in love with reformed bad boy Logan Eccles, and she still has a one-liner for nearly every occasion. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking about Veronica Mars on today's Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me and Glenn from NPR member station WHYY in Philadelphia is Christina Tucker, co-host of the podcast Unfriendly Black Hotties. Hey, Christina.
Hey.
And with Christina also in the studio is our friend Margaret Willison, who is one third of the podcast Appointment Television and one half of the newsletter Two Bossy Dames. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Linda.
We're so delighted to have both of you sitting in the studio together getting up to all kinds of mischief, as we know you are. So before we get started, I just want to say this is a spoiled conversation about this season. There are eight episodes. If you really care about this, you've probably watched them already. You know, I feel for you because journalists who are covering this received an email from Hulu that said, do not reveal that X, and it gave away the entire season. But we will be spoiling it later as we go, so just be conscious of the fact that this is a spoilery episode. Glenn,
yep.
Let's talk about the new Veronica Mars episodes. Just as background, were you a Veronica Mars person when it was on?
Certainly was.
All right. And how do you feel about these episodes?
I am really encouraged by the direction that this new season goes, because where this felt like growth, the movie, which is the last time we saw this cast, felt like regression, felt like fan service. And I didn't mind that because I was a fan.
Right.
And I was being serviced, and that was fine with me. But that was completely forgettable. And I say that the movie was completely forgettable in the sense that I forgot everything that happened. I looked at the Wikipedia page yesterday and was like, was I on a bender? I remember none of this. Except, and we've discussed this many times, how poorly Logan's navy whites fit him.
Seriously, they looked like someone else's clothes.
It was crazy. Now,
You're not wrong.
In his defense, Jason Dorings is not a guy who can buy off the rack, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that shoulder-to-waist ratio, you can't just go to the costume shop and get
it. It's true. He has, particularly, I would say, even more so in these episodes,
yeah,
gigantic big shoulders on Doring and a little teeny waist.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Just a little triangle.
It's crazy. So I liked just about everything about the show in its original incarnation. It was pulpy. It was satisfying. I liked the plot twist. I liked the clever dialogue because the dialogue was clever without being Buffy quippage. You know, I have nothing wrong with Buffy quippage on Buffy, but it's been imitated a lot. I think the new season broke from the past just enough. We would see characters we know and like. They'd come on. They'd just stay long enough not to derail anything, and then get the hell out. And I also like that we finally got rid of the thing that I like least about the show, which was the endless churn of boyfriends and shipping. And
this is where we're going to get super spoilery.
Yeah.
So just take a deep breath.
I thought for a variety of reasons they were all duds. And, and because I think this show is so good at making Veronica fascinating and interesting and fun.
Yeah.
And none of these dudes held a candle to her. So I like that the showrunner, Rob Thomas, has made a very clear decision to pare away the teen soap opera and just make it a mystery show, and I'm all in for that.
It's really interesting because, you know, there are people who say, and I think this is how Rob Thomas, who created it, sees the show. He says it's a noir mystery show that happens to kind of take place in a teen drama milieu, as it were, in its original incarnation. I think that what he did with this season indicates that that's how he feels, right? He wants to go forward, and he talked about this a little bit, he wants to go forward with a noir, kind of very dark, if they continue to make more, with a darker mystery, kind of Veronica as the sort of pained noir detective. Whereas Willa Paskin, who's the TV critic at Slate, has written about the show as a teen drama that had sort of some mystery elements to make it more interesting than your average teen soap opera. And I think which of those things you thought it was has a lot to do with how you will receive these episodes.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Christina, what did you think?
So I think for me, it mostly worked. I think the tone similarities work really well. There were some choices that I didn't fully love and understand, primarily around the way that Veronica and Logan's relationship works or doesn't.
Yeah.
And what the show seems to be telling us about if that's a good thing or a bad thing that I found a little eye-rolly. But for the most part, I was very happy to be back. I really do love all of those original folks. I loved some of the cameos that we get. There's absolutely too much Patton Oswalt, but that's...
Agreed.
I was really hoping he would be like a quick cameo in the first episode, and then I was like, boy, oh boy, is he still here, huh?
Too much.
Too much Oswalt.
And I think too obvious where they're going with that. He plays a guy who runs like an internet true crime solving site that jumps in and we're going to help Veronica, and he's sort of the striving nerd who wants to help, and you just know he's going to be a bad guy. Come on, man.
Yeah.
You just know he's going
to
turn out
to still be there.
A bad guy. Margaret, what did you think?
I'm a longtime Veronica Mars fan, much like Glenn. I've watched that first season probably more times than almost any other television show because I so enjoy sitting down and watching it with new people and just like inducting them into the glory of that first perfect season. I'd say everything since then has been a case of diminishing returns, but the returns have still been so high that I'm delighted. And I was really excited about the direction I knew this went at the end of the show. I'd been spoiled for the emotional arc of Logan dying suddenly, but not spoiled on the mystery arc. And then when I saw how they actually did it, I was pretty disappointed because it seems like they want to have their Logan cake and eat it too. In the first half of the season, they do some really, really interesting examination of what the dynamic between these two people would actually be like. What does it look like when you're two people who are supremely screwed up by circumstances, who've experienced enormous trauma, and one of you has decided, I don't want to live like this anymore. I'm in therapy. I'm figuring myself out. And the other one is literally scoffing at the idea of that and scoffing at the idea that they should participate in that. And like wistful for the screwed up boyfriend that they used to have.
Specifically and openly misses the bad temper and the
rage.
The rage, the sort of jealousy and possessiveness.
Right.
The kind of all of the dysfunctional behaviors that Logan showed when he was younger.
Yeah, and that is an unbelievably interesting question. And I think the real answer to that question is they don't get married and the one who's committed to getting healthy leaves the one who scoffs at his attempts to do so and seems only interested in an unhealthy version of himself. And honestly, I think that's much more noir. Like, I think that's much more noir and damaging than Veronica has one near-death experience, wakes up and realizes she is ready to be married to Logan, ? And they get married, and then he gets blown up. And then we get this coda at the end with a voicemail from his therapist that Logan shared with his therapist about how Veronica is the person he wanted to raise children with because she's so tough. And it's like, actually, haven't we been looking in a really interesting and progressive and cool way at how being so tough has actually damaged Veronica? Like, isn't that an interesting question?
Yeah.
And that's where I would refute the question of, do you understand this as a teen drama or do you understand this as a mystery show? And what I would say is I understood this as a mystery show with a character who was capable of being changed by what she came in contact with.
Sure.
And Rob Thomas seems to want to move forward writing this as a mystery show with a main character who is sealed off in this sort of idealized shell of cynicism and one-liners and not capable of being changed or moved by what's going on around her. And I don't love that for Veronica.
I think that, you know, Rob Thomas for a long time has been to me, and this is before the movie, before the crowdfunding, was maybe better than anybody at and was an early adopter of kind of getting in there and talking to fans a lot and making them feel special. And it was kind of one of the ways that he promoted that show, kept that show going, built the fandom. Like, he was a very involved in the fandom showrunner before that was really a thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I think his push-pull with the fandom, specifically the I want to see a happy ending for Logan and Veronica fandom, has, I think it got in his head. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. Because if you go back, and I said this at the time that they made the crowdfunded movie, there's a real issue around these people paid for this movie, so I want to give them what they want. Right. Because the perception was that the movie had largely been funded by people who loved Logan and Veronica and wanted to see them together and happy. And so my read of the movie at the time was that, you know, we joke about the Navy Whites, but I think there's a there's a sort of a metaphor there for the fact that Logan comes back and he doesn't really seem like Logan. He seems like he's a very idealized. I mean, I'm all for character growth, but he's sort of
and muscle growth
and muscle growth exactly. But he's sort of not a recognizable Logan to me. Like he's so perfect and perfectly patient and perfectly evolved in all these ways. And I said this in a piece that I have gotten in a lot of trouble about with a lot of people over the last couple of weeks. But I think that the way Thomas chose to respond to crowdfunding, which was by doing his version of what he thought fan service was, made it very hard for him to then continue to make the show he wants to make, which is kind of a difficult, gnarly, complicated show. Because by the time you get to this season, Logan, it's not just that Logan's in therapy, it's that Logan kind of never makes an error. He's kind of always, you know, like she, if she goads and goads and goads, she can bring out his temper. But other than that, he's kind of this perfect, you know, always there in the nick of time, always, you know, supportive and great and totally mentally healthy and very much inert. And so I do think that Thomas had painted himself into a corner.
Yeah, and he busts out that tired trope of, well, if our main characters are happy and in love, then they're not interesting. I mean, and
I don't think it's that. I think it's that it's not noir, and I understand that.
Yeah. But, I mean, in interviews, he's mentioned this whole thing about we can't pair them off, and that's fine. I get that. Yeah. But it does leave me with a concern, which is, A, you say goodbye to your soap opera elements with the most soap opera death in history.
Well, and
the most melodramatic, the day of her wedding.
Well,
and ridiculousness and over the top.
And need it be said, I didn't see a body.
Hey.
We're getting a clean break from all the Logan Michigas. That's great. I'm fine with that. We're also getting a clean break from Neptune. And this show is about Neptune. The thing that I like about this show is its genre elements are, like all genre elements, about something. They are about the racial and class distinctions in this town. And the first season is the best season because when we start it, Veronica is an outcast from the world that she was in, and she's looking at it from a perspective she's never had before. It's basically our perspective. We share her perspective as well on all these horrible rich people being horrible to each other. And without it, if we go to, you know, Connecticut, what the hell are you, what is this?
Yeah.
And also, I also think that this season did Weevil very wrong.
He
was making,
he
was becoming more interesting in the movie, and then they just kind of like cut him off at the knees.
What are you thinking, Christina?
I'm thinking about kind of the general tone of the mystery itself. I felt was a little off. It was, first, I felt like there was a little too much happening mystery-wise. I was like, what's with the congressman? What's with the bombs?
Yes,
there's
too
the
many
cartel
threads.
Guys.
Yeah.
Who, why are we still talking about this engagement ring? What is going on with all of these people? And also the idea that like a very small town has been concurrently bombed over a series of weeks and or months is like truly horrifying.
Yeah.
And it never really felt like they sat with that and kind of like thought about what that would realistically do to the people that lived in that town. And everyone was like, boy, another bomb went off. Better crack off a joke and keep it moving. It was just like, I don't know. I feel like that's serious enough in which you would have a little more, you know, severity and or reverence for what is occurring in your town.
Yeah, I would say, Rob Thomas, if you want to write a mystery show, like, you need to show me that you're better at writing mysteries than this particular series does, because we simultaneously have too many threads going on at the beginning, and then he ties a bunch of them off super early so that we're even left with, like, you've got to make your Patton Oswalt revealed like a double twist. Like, they initially think it's him, and then they're faked out of thinking it's him, and then it's still him. And that gives me no time to experience, not that I necessarily think Patton could deliver this, that character pen as a being of menace.
Right.
He gets like one evil, cackling, maniacal moment in the back of a cop car.
Yeah.
And like, that's it. And you're like, okay, well,
right,
there's no tension here.
And
no.
The thing that's interesting is the thread of the mystery that I think is the most Neptune-y and the most Veronica Mars-y, as Glenn was talking about, is the part that's about real estate, right?
Yes.
Which is the part that's about how all of this ultimately comes down to rich people trying to cause chaos so that they can buy up cheap waterfront real estate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is also where the standout stars are.
makes sense and is Neptune-y, and I get it. But I do not need any more kind of generic use of the Mexican cartel, which has kind of become the equivalent of how in the 80s, every like TV primetime drama was always, you know, the crime shows, it was always bad guys with Russian accents. Like that was always what on like Scarecrow and Mrs. King or MacGyver or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think this Mexican cartel thing, particularly at this moment in all of our lives, like the kind of generic use of that as menace. Mm-hmm. It brings up both the problem of it feels racist on a show that doesn't necessarily have a good history of dealing with race very effectively.
Yep.
There were many things I liked about the season, including a lot of the dialogue I think is still really fun. I think Veronica and her dad are still really fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Rico, he's great. My Love heart. If you had to destroy one of the two male pillars in Veronica's life, like, I'm so glad you blew up Logan.
Yeah.
Because if you had blown up Keith, like, I would still be in bed.
But I feel like, and I feel like instinctively, as you say that, you know he would never do that. Yeah. Like, that is mm-hmm. too foundational.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like he would never do that.
But that's also the problem, is like, if you want this show to sincerely have the stakes that you think you're playing around with Logan, I should believe you could blow up Keith, too. And if you're not going to be playing in that sandbox, then accept the limitations of how much damage and of what degree of permanence you want to inflict on this character and pick some of the more interesting stories in that ballpark. It really troubles me that he says what he wants to do moving forward is make Sherlock, because that is another show that started out with really psychologically interesting characters and retreated to those psychologically interesting characters being frozen in amber exactly as they were and increasingly high stakes things happening around them in such a way that I can't connect to that story any longer.
Yeah.
Because the melodrama and its impact on the people involved are completely out of whack.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, I am curious to hear what all of you listening think of Veronica Mars. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time to talk about what is making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Spotlight. Spotlight is your destination for curated expert content that helps you discover how beauty, skincare, or medical aesthetic treatments may fit into your routine. In addition to offering reviews, insider profiles, and fact-check stories, Spotlight helps users find licensed providers in their area with a database of over 30,000 local licensed specialists. Learn more about the latest trends and research at the Spotlight, SPOTLYTE.com/happyhour.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Curio Collection by Hilton. With all Curio Collection by Hilton hotels, there's something more to discover. Take the foodie-forward resorts of Sai Lagoon in the Maldives and the Iguron Hotel in Spain. Iguron's Michelin-starred chef Diego Gallegos romances palates with multicultural and environmentally friendly dishes. Sai Lagoon takes personalization to a new level by using natural ingredients to create unique plates for each guest. Are you curious? Visit Hilton.com/NPR.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Legion is coming to an end on FX after 3 seasons. And if you are listening to this on Friday, the 9th of August, exactly has one episode to go. This was a series created by Noah Hawley of TV's Fargo. It stars Dan Stevens as a mutant with great psychic powers, yada, yada, good versus evil, yada, yada, yada. I was not sold on this show at first because here was Noah Hawley coming to this weird corner of the Marvel Universe, dipping his toe in and being kind of smug about it. Doing things that I think he was convinced were innovative, where I just wanted to sit there and just chapter and verse about where all these ideas that he was throwing at the screen had been done before in comics for many, many years. He's not a comic book guy. I don't think he realized what he was getting into. But here's how he gets me every time. This cast, Dan Stevens, Jean Smart, Jemaine Clement, Aubrey Plaza, Bill Irwin, Hamish Linkletter, I am only human. So you can't deny the style of this thing, the visual, the sound, the music, the color tracking. And he's got some real surreal chutzpah. There's something very unhurried about the show. It's digressive. It is indulgent. It can be slow. But it's coming at a superhero narrative from a slant to specifically to deny you the kind of catharsis that you think you're going to get out of a superhero show and present you with an entirely different kind of one. So He knows, for example, that these kind of shows where there's psychics, they always will devolve to, at some point at the climax, one dude staring across a room at another dude, waving his hands and grimacing like he's constipated, while another dude across the room is doing the same thing, and then they just fill in special effects in between them, and that's supposed to be satisfying. And it's not. It's always boring. So he says, look, if these battles, these psychic battles are taking place on the astral plane or whatever, let's make them visually and auditorially interesting. Let's make them a dance-off. Let's make them a rap battle. And recently we just had a rap battle between Jermaine Clement and Jason Mantzoukas. Who is not going to be there for that? I am there for that. So it's coming to an end on this coming Monday night at 10 Eastern. If you have dropped this show or you're just curious about what this incredibly visually intriguing approach to superhero storytelling can be, I would urge you to look it up. And it's really coming for a landing and it's nailing the dismount. So that's Legion on FX.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Christina Tucker, what is making you happy this week?
Nicely piggybacking off of Glenn's Jason Mantzoukas mention, I have begun listening to the How Did This Get Made podcast on the Werewolf Network. I will say, if you are a person who finds Mantzoukas to be a lot, go in knowing that he is a central host of the podcast, and he will Mantzoukas very hard on said podcast. But the premise basically is that they, Jason Mantzoukas, Paul Scheer, and June Diane Raphael all watch a very terrible movie and discuss how it got made. I think June is a very crucial addition. There are a few episodes, quite a few episodes, where she is not on due to her, you know, Grace and Frankie shooting. So if you are going back into the catalog, I would say start with some June episodes. You really get the feel of what the podcast could and should be. They do have great guests a lot. Paul Feig is hilarious on it. Cameron Esposito, Rhea Butcher, a lot of wonderful folks. And I would recommend, if you are coming into this podcast now, their Fast and Furious episodes are wonderful because they both love and want to be in those movies so badly that each time a new one comes out, they're all like, did you talk to your agent about getting in this movie? Because I couldn't get in and I was really upset. Yeah, if you're interested in a new podcast moment and want to get into some funny folks talking about some truly horrible movies, dive right into How Did This Get Made on the Earwolf Network.
Thank you very much. Margaret H. Hula Hoop Willison, what is making you happy this week?
So what is making me happy this week? It seemed fitting that since I was nitpicking the quality of the mystery with season 4 of Veronica Mars, that I come to you with a mystery that I really love. And timing is such that I can do that very enthusiastically for Laura Lippman's new novel, Lady in the Lake. Laura Lippman is a storied mystery writer, also a former reporter in Baltimore, and both of those qualities come together really beautifully in this novel, which is set in 1965 and 1966 and centers on a woman named Madeline, who is 37 and in a nice, boring marriage with a nice, boring Jewish man, raising a nice, boring Jewish son, and suddenly wakes up and realizes that she does not want to be living that life anymore. She wants to be living a life where she matters. And her decision happens to coincide with the discovery of a body of a young Black woman in a fountain in Baltimore. And this is a story that nobody else in Baltimore cares about, which means Madeline can care about it because it can make her career. And so you watch her prying into this mystery, kicking up all kinds of dust. And what I really love about this book is you see the story switch perspectives throughout. So you get dialogues from the dead woman watching Madeline create all this chaos around her. And in each scene, you see Madeline in a new point of view character is brought forward for a single chapter, and you hear how they see everything that's going on around them, which creates a book that is simultaneously really interesting and discursive and fun with perspectives, but also like a real page turner. I just choked this down in like a week and a half.
Thank you very much, Margaret H. Willison, Laura Lippman's Lady in the Lake. What is making me happy this week is a book that I have to warn you is not coming out until October, but I feel it is my task always to give you some hope for the future, remind you that there's always something good around the corner. In this case, it is a book coming out on October 22nd by Joe Posnanski called the life and afterlife of Harry Houdini. Joe is a sports writer, a wonderful, wonderful writer, and the host of the Pozcast, which is his podcast, as you might know. And this book is kind of a cultural history of Harry Houdini, looking at both, you know, trying to untangle all the legends around Houdini's life, but also thinking about why was the idea of being an escape artist interesting to people? Like that if you, he points out at one point, if you said the act that I'm going to do and charge money for is first I'm in handcuffs and then I get out of them, like it's hard sometimes to understand why that's an act, but it was, and it was incredibly popular. And so it's a really good book that, like any good cultural history, looks at where the culture has been throughout, in this case, the sort of early middle 20th century, through the lens of this one story and this one guy. It's really a fascinating book. I would put it on your list now, The Life and Afterlife of Harry Houdini, coming out in October. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. I am at Linda Holmes. Glenn is at G.H. Weldon. Christina is at C_GraceT. And Margaret, as always, is at Mrs. Friday Next. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer, Lauren Landau, at Lauren M. Landau. You can find our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. And Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks so much to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here next week.
The world is complicated, but knowing the past can help us understand it so much better.
That's where we come in. I'm Rand Abdel-Fattah.
I'm Ramtin Arablouei, and we're the hosts of Throughline, NPR's history podcast.
Every week, we'll dig into forgotten stories from the moments that shaped our world.
Throughline from NPR. Listen and subscribe now.